Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlene Nesky. It was mid-August. Summer clouds tore at the peaks of the Beaverhead Mountains. The Lemhi were spread out in the pass below, gathering roots, hunting, and fishing. They were preparing for their annual buffalo hunt on the plains. A lone warrior caused a minor commotion when he returned to camp, claiming he had seen four men as pale as ashes walking up the pass. No one believed him. They had never seen a white man. It was August 11th, 1805. An advance party of the Lewis and Clark expedition, led by Meriwether Lewis, was at the headwaters of the Missouri River searching for the Shoshone people. Lewis had known from the start that the success of their journey depended on the availability of horses and native guides to take them across the Rocky Mountains. Failure to locate the Shoshone or some other tribe with horses meant they would have to endure another winter east of the Rockies. It could mean the end of their mission. Then he spotted the Lemhi warrior on what Lewis called his elegant horse. The Lemhi are a branch of the Shoshone people who once ranged across the dry northern basin of California and Idaho, over the Rocky Mountains, and into the plains of Montana and Wyoming. Lemhi culture revolved around the abundant life cycles of the Rocky Mountain rivers and valleys, differing from their Shoshone cousins to the south, who practice a typical Great Basin or desert way of life. Lemhi tribal member Rod Arrowhite.
We had different clans of Shoshone speakers, which made up the Lemhi people. We had those that were known as the Samanite, the Aghaidika. You had the Tukurika, who ate some Rocky Mountain sheep, which stayed close to the Middle Fork of the Salmon River, and Kuchudika, which is the buffalo hunters from the Chalice area.
Today, the Aghaidika Lemhi have been forced from their homeland. But in the summer of 1805, they were still located in the Salmon River country of east central Idaho.
And our oral history relates that we come from the sky of the mountains. And the Salmon River country is surrounded by mountains all the way around. You've got the Bitterroot Mountain Range to the east, the Lemhi and the Salmon River Mountain Range to the north and to the west as well. A land we basically occupied for many, many years.
While Lewis's advance team searched the pass, William Clark and the rest of the expedition struggled up the shallow Jefferson River. With them, the young mother known as Sacagawea identified familiar landmarks. Kidnapped as a child, Sacagawea had been torn away from her people, so finding the Shoshone meant more than the purchase of horses. It meant returning to the land of her birth, for Sacagawea was a Lemhi. In the journals of Lewis and Clark, William Clark states the astounding fact that Sacagawea was a sister of Kameawait, the leader of the Lemhi band who became instrumental in arranging for horses and guides for the explorer's journey over the Rockies. So Lewis and Clark owe their success in part to a stroke of luck and the generosity of the Lemhi, Rod Arrowhite.
And so I guess that's kind of the hoping during the bicentennial we can bring that out to the rest of America to understand, you know, and where is her people? What has happened to her people? We're still here. We're growing. But unfortunately, we're growing and developing outside of our homelands. What I'm saying here is our attachment to our homeland is who we are.
I'm Arlie Nesky, and this is Wisdom of the Elders. Sacagawea stands out as the most prominent of the Lemhi Shoshone, yet some Shoshone question her role in the expedition. It helped facilitate westward expansion, eventually affecting her tribe's homeland and traditions. The forced relocation of the Lemhis to Fort Hall, Idaho, in the early 1900s is also a painful chapter for many tribal members who still long to return to their ancestral homeland in Salmon, Idaho. In today's Elder Wisdom, Brian Bull explores the determination of the Lemhi people to hold on to their cultural identity.
Rod Arrowhite knows his ancestral home is now largely the stuff of legend. Rivers full of fat salmon, eagles peering from towering trees, and hillsides brimming with berries and other foods. While Arrowhite's ancestors were the ones forced from their homeland near current-day Salmon, Idaho, he and other Lemhi still see themselves as refugees, driven away from the craggy forests and canyons, which sheltered and fed his forefathers.
It's just a way of life that has no longer available to Lemhi people. Even though we go back still, because we're so attached to the land, that's the land of our forefathers, where our parents and grandparents and their grandparents have given their life, shed blood, shed tears, so we can call that the land of the Lemhi people.
Arrowhite says between a reliable food supply and protection from nearby enemy tribes, the mountainous terrain provided the Lemhi of the early 1800s with a good life. Then one day, his people were greeted by the Lewis and Clark expedition.
They come into our valley as starving explorers, and we were the tribe sitting over there with the horses and the good diets. They asked for our help to find a passage to the Pacific Ocean. If we knew what happened to us today, living on another reservation, I don't know if we would have provided the assistance.
Settlers began trickling and then cascading into the country. By the late 1850s, many Mormons had arrived, established a fort, and developed irrigation projects in the region. One of the Lemhi leaders, Snag, worked to keep relations between his people and the settlers peaceful. Lemhi educator Emma George says it was a valiant but tragic effort.
Snag, he was traveling up to the ancestral lands in what is now called Bannock, Montana. He was in a hot springs bathing. He was murdered. The chief of the Lemhis was killed. And this man, Buck Stinson, he scalped Snag. And he took his scalp into the saloon and had it on a stick and was waving it around, saying, "I killed a chief. I killed a chief." That's one of the stories that you'll hear from Bannock City. His nephew, he was a war chief. His name was Tindoy. He had promised Snag that he would continue to have a good relationship with the white people. The next day he came to Bannock City and he went out into the street and spoke eloquently in front of the people in the city of Bannock City. And he asked them why this was done. Is there no remorse? Is there no compassion? It says, "Our people are a peaceful people, and we wish to remain that way." And he says, "I come before you today, despite the fact that my uncle was killed." He says, "I will continue, and I ask that you as well continue to keep peace."
Tindoy attempted to keep peace between his people and the U.S. government, even as wars were breaking out between the army and the neighboring Nez Perce and Bannock nations. But despite the tribe's intentions, in 1875 their lands were whittled down to a 100-square-mile reservation along the Lemhi River. They did their best to survive and prosper, but even this tiny parcel was coveted by the arriving farmers and miners. Chief Tindoy died just months before the Lemhi were forced from their beloved homeland in 1907. On the 200-mile journey south to the Fort Hall Reservation, hills and mountains carved by rivers, carpeted with trees, gave way to scrubby, barren landscapes. Leo Arrowhite says the difference was apparent even when he grew up.
"Nothing here. Burned the sage was to warm me up. There's no wood around here. Eat a jackrabbit. That's all we eat. Jackrabbit and fish. A grasshopper. That's all we eat."
Many Lemhi Shoshone refused to let go. Families would come back and set up semi-permanent camps around Salmon, which allowed them to stay for a while and hunt and fish.
"Yeah, we went back to over there. 42, 42. A lot of food. Not like any reservation here. I used to go fish every day and get a steelhead, fish everything. You can kill a deer anytime you want."
Many white landowners encouraged the natives to return, sympathetic to their need to come back. Fort Hall resident Emma George.
"I make my home here, but my heart is in the Salmon River country, where the river flows. The blue skies, the beautiful mountains. I can identify with how my ancestor felt about that valley. It's a part of the heart, a part of the soul, and a part of who we are and what we are. And to deny that, that's denying ourselves.
The Lemhi, seen as latecomers to the area, were expected to assimilate with both the dominant culture and the Shoshone Bannock. Emma George recalls how the Lemhi's revered ancestor was regarded by some of the Shoshone Bannock.
When I came to Fort Hall and said, you know, I'm a Agadikat, and I had heard comments about Sacagawean, and they were hurtful. Some people said, she's a traitor. She went and brought the white people here. But I do believe there is a purpose, and I do believe there were prophecies that the white people would come, and that happened. And I think that it's going to come full circle. I can't say exactly, but it's for good intentions, for friendship.
Emma George says in time, she was able to connect with Sacagawea and set things straight with the help of traditional elders.
I believe that our ancestors are living in the spirit world, and I believe that her spirit was at unrest because of what happened to the Indian people. And my families and elders, they went back to North Dakota, and they had met with some Sioux people. And these Sioux people had told them that there was a lady crying by the river, by the banks. They said it was a spirit, and they could hear her in the evenings, and they could see a silhouette, and they could hear her crying. And they believed her to be Sacagawea, crying by the river because of what had taken place amongst our people. And she wants things to be right with good intentions. And our elders, our people went back there, and they met with those Sioux people, and they had a pipe ceremony, and they prayed for her spirit, and they prayed for our people. They prayed for the people. And they had said that since that ceremony, that spirit was at rest.
For the Lemhi residents of Fort Hall, the long road home still leads to the rushing waters of the Salmon River and craggy bluffs teeming with wildlife. Many hope to win federal recognition. Those who make the journey with their children and grandchildren can appreciate the bittersweet legacy their ancestors left for them, one of peaceful reverence and an enduring devotion to their homeland. For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Brian Bull.
Brian Bull is Assistant News Director for Wisconsin Public Radio and is an enrolled member of the Nez Perce Tribe. He lives with his wife, two kids, and three cats in Madison, Wisconsin. Coming up in Speaking Native, linguist Don Addison introduces us to the Shoshone language. In Sacred Landscape, Judy Bluehorse Skelton shares her thoughts about the famous Sacagawea. In Tribal Rhythms, Nico Wynn brings us the music of the ghost dance, and we meet a Shoshone man who fights type 2 diabetes with a traditional diet.
I'm living now beyond that, of living a lifestyle of true natives of this continent here, this Turtle Island.
Stay with us. I'm Arlie Nesky, and this is Wisdom of the Elders.
Wisdom of the Elders is an American Indian nonprofit corporation located in Portland, Oregon. We record and preserve oral history and cultural arts of American Indian storytellers, historians, artists, and song carriers, and share their messages with diverse public audiences.
Hey, ho, hey, ah, ah.